Report.
There was no reportable action.
Thank you. We'll begin our meeting with a call to order, and we will have a Pledge of Allegiance by two special guests this evening. I'm honored to be joined by two of my grandchildren, Hunter and Joy. And if you would step up to the lectern, and if you need any help, our police chief is ready and able. And why don't we all stand and be led in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Please stand, salute, pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I think Councilmember Moreno is doing an applause for that great Pledge of Allegiance. Good job. Not that I have any prejudice. No bias. Thank you. We'll move on and ask for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Bobo.
Here.
Councilmember Sturtevant.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First item is approval of the agenda. And with the approval of the agenda, we are waiving the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda?
Move approval agenda.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Sturtevant, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Barbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
I vote motion passes.
Thank you. This evening we have two presentations, both of which are very meaningful to me. We're going to begin with a proclamation recognizing April 2017 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we should have a couple of representatives from the RISE organization. Are they here this evening? Are they not here yet? Well, I do believe we have our next proclamation folks here for Bike Month. We have Peter. Is he here from SLOCOG? I'm going to reverse the order and hope that the folks from RISE will be joining us. I'm going to turn it over to Peter Williamson and tell us a little bit about Bike Month coming up, and hopefully you'll mention Cycle de Mayo coming up as well.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor O'Malley, council members, and Atascadero. My name is Peter Williamson. I'm the employer outreach coordinator at SLOCOG, San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and that's an agency responsible for transportation planning and funding in our county. Mayor O'Malley sits on our board. I'll tell you all about that. I manage our outreach program, like I said, for employers and commuters called the Back and Forth Club. Has anyone here heard about Bike Month? It's a little month called May. It's Bike Month. A few? Couple? Two people? All right. Perfect. Well, traditionally, SLOCOG has put a lot of emphasis on Bike Month as a whole, and we staffed events and activities, funded activities throughout May, and Cycle de Mayo being one of those activities that is happening this year, which is exciting. And in recent years, we've shifted our focus a little bit to make Bike Month more accessible to everyone. So for starters, does anyone here have kids? I see some kids, which is great. So May 10th is National Bike to School Day, so grab the whole family. San Benito, Santa Margarita Elementary, Santa Rosa Academic Academy, Monterey Road, and San Gabriel are all committed to host an event on Bike to School Day, so it'll be super special. We've had really great support from Superintendent Tom Butler, and he's made Atascadero schools much more walk, bike friendly, which is awesome. Would your kid like to win a bike? Would you both like to win a bike? You can, yeah, you do. All right. So you can win a bike, and whether it's trips to school or trips around the neighborhood, help your little Billy track their rides throughout May at irideshare.org/s/bike-to-school. Student with the most rides logged throughout May will win a free bike. So kids or not, I need all of you to bike on, sorry, there's the challenge, and On May 19th, it's National Bike to Work Day. Last year, I rode with a scientific drilling employee who hadn't ridden in over 2 years, and we had a lot of people borrow bikes and bike for the first time in a very long time, got some press coverage, really exciting. I think by asking commuters to shift modes for one day, we're far more effective in showing an alternative. So this year, I'll be joining the ride from right here in downtown Atascadero out to Atascadero State Hospital for free breakfasts from K-Man on campus. I think we'll even have a vehicle escort onto campus, which is pretty cool. So how about it? Will you join me on Bike to Work Day? Maybe you don't have a bike. That's no problem. I can get you a free loaner bike. Maybe there's too many hills, a headwind, you're worried about sweating. I can get you a free electric bike. If you're worried about safety, you can bike in a group like I'm doing out to Atascadero State Hospital. I have group rides throughout the county. We'll be meeting at Malibu Coffee. I think it's just across the street at 7 a.m. on May 19th. Maybe it's too far for you. That's okay. I can get you a free bus pass and teach you how to put your bike on the bus. If you're not a bus commuter, I can get you a free bike locker at a park and ride, and you can meet up with your carpool. Or if you just want to drive most of the way alone and bike that last mile, that's okay too. I'll allow it. And then go by your local station for your chance to win a bike. You'll get a ticket for a chance to win a bike, and you also get a swag bag of all kinds of goodies. And yes, breakfast is free. Our North County stations are at Atascadero State Hospital by K-Man and at Scientific Drilling in Paso. We have 11 stations located throughout the county. And if you're not wiped from your morning commute, join us at the Guildhall. It's previously called the Grange on Broad Street in SLO. Make an exception for the Atascadero crowd. Since you bike that morning, you can drive to this one. If you like fashion, you like beer, we'll see you there. And then beyond the bike to school and bike to work days, we are challenging commuters to go by bike all month long with our revamped Bike Month challenges. So whether you work in an organization with 10 employees or 2,000, like Ash, you can track your trips throughout May to claim the title trophy in your size category. The title trophy is a little new this year. Like the Stanley Cup, this pretty classy looking display piece will go to the winner, and you'll have to defend it each year. And the winning employer in each category will also receive a free League of American Bicyclists membership and then access to next year's All-Star Challenge. The All-Star Challenge puts our very best employers against the best of Santa Barbara County. Based on our 2016 results, you can cheer on our champions at irideshare.org. That's SRAM, Caltrans, MindBody, and Cal Poly. I think UCSB on the other side, Yardi Systems, Sonos, and REI. Is anyone up for a daily 30-mile ride? Well, the Mono a Mono Bike Month Challenge might be for you if you're very competitive. The title trophy will go to the bicyclist with the most miles. Any group of six can also form their own team again this year, and you can compete in as many challenges as you'd like, which is pretty fun. So join all the good times at iRideshare.org. And then thanks to some strong support from the community, you'll have motivation to get on your bike pretty much every day in May with over 41 community events, including Cycle Day Mile, which is the annual event here in Atascadero, kind of in between Atascadero and Paso, and celebrates the Future Connection bike path. Do you know the date on that, Mayor O'Malley? May the 5th, 6th. The 6th. So get on your bikes on May 6th and definitely go to Cycle Day Mile. It's a good time. Cycle Day 6. So you can also share your Bike Month experiences, your daily commute with the hashtag Let's Get Visible. We'll have a mystery prize for the winner in that. And then we also have our Bike Month shirts. Does anyone have a Bike Month shirt from past years? I think I gave some to the council. Somebody here. All right. So there's some shirts out there. They're pretty cool, and they're going to be even better this year. Unfortunately, with some budget shortfalls, we're asking for some support. So if you want to purchase your Bike Month shirt this year for $10, you can go to rideshare.org/store. We covered a lot of details, including those big dates to remember. Then May 19th, we have May 6th and May 10th. So those are your key dates. Get all your information by either emailing, calling me. You can go to rideshare.org/bike-. A lot of dashes and slashes. Probably just give me a call. I'll get you all the details. Any questions from the council this evening?
Council questions. Very good job. Very good presentation. Thank you.
Perfect. See you in the bike lane in May.
We'll see you out there during bike month.
Thank you.
I will be on a stationary bike on most of the May of month of May following knee surgery, but next year. Let's see, do we have some representatives from RISE here? We do. We changed order because we did not want to miss having you with us, so I will now go up to presentation number one, proclamation recognizing the Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I believe we have our education program manager and our education program coordinators here. And let me begin with reading the proclamation, then I'm going to turn it over to you. I do believe we have some slides to show regarding the program and some events they have coming up. And at the conclusion, after I read the proclamation, ask for input from you. I will ask Councilman Burbeau to maybe talk a little bit about RISE from your experience, because you have been a member of the board, and it's a very worthy organization in our community. But our proclamation we have for April 2017, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Whereas Sexual Assault Awareness Month calls attention to the fact that sexual violence is widespread and impacts every person in the city of Atascadero, and whereas rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment harm our community, and statistics show that 1 in 5 women and 1 in 71 men will be raped at some point in their lives, and whereas child sexual abuse prevention must be a priority to confront the reality that 1 in 6 boys, 1 in 4 girls will experience a sexual assault before age 18, and youth ages 12 to 17 are 2.5 times as likely to be victims of sexual violence. Whereas our local student population is also at high risk, nationally, 1 in 5 women and 1 in 16 men are sexually assaulted during their time in college. And whereas last year, RISE received 1,146 crisis calls from members of our community and sent advocates 80 times to accompany sexual assault survivors at SART medical exams, law enforcement interviews, etc. Whereas the number of RISE clients receiving counseling for sexual assault-related issues continues to rise every year, with a total of 2,126 hours of counseling provided at low or no cost to community members across San Luis Obispo County last year. And whereas the theme of this year's Sexual Assault Awareness Month campaign is Engaging New Voices, the campaign calls on new partners and community members to help expand sexual assault prevention efforts and ensure the next generation fosters attitudes that promote healthy relationships, equality, and respect. And whereas the City of Atascadero joins RISE and other advocates and communities across the country in taking action to prevent sexual violence and acknowledges that each day of the year is an opportunity to create change for the future. Now, therefore, the City Council of the City of Atascadero does hereby proclaim April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month and April 15th as Walk a Mile in Her Shoes Day, which I'm sure you will be telling us a little bit about. Please introduce yourselves and take it away.
My name is Ashley Vereen. I'm the Education Services Manager at RISE, and this is Brandon Covarrubias. He's the Education Program Coordinator. First off, we want to thank you for this proclamation. And we want to talk a little bit about what RISE is. It's a nonprofit that serves survivors of sexual assault and intimate partner violence, as well as their loved ones. While we provide intimate partner violence services for the North County, we are the only agency that's dedicated to serving survivors of sexual assault or abuse and their families in the entire county of San Luis Obispo. RISE's education team is really thrilled to partner with the Atascadero High's Wellness Center to begin implementing a new program called the Close to Home Project. The goal of this project is to involve youth as well as the entire community of Atascadero in the mission to end sexual assault and intimate partner violence. We will be fully implementing the program in the fall, so we look forward to giving you more information and getting your support. So last year, RISE helped more than 3,000 women, men, and children who had been affected by sexual assault or abuse through free and confidential services, including a 24-hour hotline, counseling, crisis intervention, accompaniment, legal support, and more. We also provided education services across the county in an effort to prevent this crime from happening in the first place. Our vision is to create a world free of sexual violence, and that means creating a community that is aware and ready to step in when they need to.
All right. And this is where the Walk a Mile poster comes in hand. So every year, we invite San Luis Obispo County men, women, and children to participate in our annual Sexual Assault Awareness Month event, Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. It's an international event, international men's march to end rape, sexual assault, and gender-based violence. This event invites men to march in high heels, in women's high heels, to represent the role that they play in ending a form of violence that is overwhelmingly perpetrated by men against women. However, you're encouraged to walk in any type of shoe that you wish, because sexual assault and gender-based violence affects us all. Women, men, children, members of the LGBT community, incarcerated individuals, people with disabilities, those of all socioeconomic levels, races, and religions, and people in all walks of life.
He was trying to take the mic from me. So this year will be our 15th annual walk in San Luis Obispo, our fourth annual event in Paso, and our first annual event in Aurora Grande. So we've got a lot coming up. The Paso event will be held at Downtown City Park on Saturday, April 15th. And it will feature live music by Nothing But Trouble. There'll be awareness activities for all ages and a one-mile walk through downtown with people in heels, so it's always a sight to see. This year, we're very excited that Congressman Carbajal will be joining our Paso walk, along with Mayor O'Malley, who is returning as a celebrity walker and is the reigning celebrity walker of the year from 2016. So there's that. We want to thank you for being a leader in the effort to raise awareness and funds for this important cause. If anyone else wants to join, it's definitely not too late. Please check out our website at walkamileslow.org for details and registration info. You can donate or you can even join the mayor's team.
And we'd also like to thank Mayor O'Malley for hosting the upcoming 9th annual Mother's Day picnic fundraiser for RISE at the Portola Inn on Sunday, May 14th. This beautiful family event features lawn games, music, and a gourmet picnic buffet that is free for moms to attend. It also provides many free meals for our families who are celebrating Mother's Day while staying in our emergency shelters. Tickets go on sale online at riseslow.org soon. We'd also like to thank and acknowledge our staff, volunteers, and board of directors for all the hard work that they put in and all the efforts that they put forth to end sexual assault in our community. They're an incredible group of people and are completely dedicated to their work, and I'm honored to work with such a compassionate group of people. Most importantly, Sexual Assault Awareness Month is about the victims, whether they've told their story or not. So thank you for joining us in raising awareness and destroying myths that make it difficult for survivors to talk about their experiences. Thank you again for the proclamation, and we hope to see you all on the 15th in City Park for the fourth annual Walk a Mile in Paso Robles. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm going to turn over to Councilman Burbeau, who has been on the RISE board. And then when you have completed, go ahead and invite everyone up to the front, and we'll take a picture together.
Right. Well, thank you, Mayor. Yes, as Mayor indicated, I did spend a couple years on the RISE board, ending right after my election to the council. And it is really a great group of people. I interacted primarily with the board, but the staff and the volunteers are really incredible. The crisis line is manned primarily by volunteers who go through some extensive training to be able to fulfill that role. And within our community, RISE operates a women's shelter, as it also does in Paso. And people sometimes can get confused with the women's shelter program in San Luis Obispo and don't realize that other piece, that RISE operates the sexual assault response prevention program for the entire county. But they do the women's shelter in Atascadero in particular is you know, very much a benefit for our community and the residents of our community who need it in their time of need. And the city has helped that program from time to time with CDBG grants and some other support. And unfortunately, I will be out of town this weekend and won't be able to walk a mile in her shoes in Paso Robles like I've done
the
last year.
Well, don't worry. There's a lot of other events you can come to.
That's true. I'm surprised. I assume the mayor, after his knee surgery, is not going to be wearing high heels.
Not this year. I did last year, but not this year.
Having done it a couple years, it is quite uncomfortable, and I don't know why they're popular. the high heels, that is. The event's a lot of fun. So, anyway, thank you very much for coming this evening. And I've been in your shoes receiving the proclamation in the past. So with that, I think we'll invite everybody out for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, great.
David.
My apologies for the mic adjustment. The problem with me and a mic is I pace even when I'm in a chair. So I'm spinning around like this, and you can't hear me unless I actually have the mic where my mouth is. So we have to take a little extra time. And thank you also for joining us in these presentations. It's very meaningful in our community to have these organizations that do a lot for our communities, and we'd like to recognize them. Next item on the agenda is the consent calendar, which are items of routine nature that we can vote on as they've already been researched and discussed in the past, unless someone would like to pull an item for more discussion, either from the council or the public. Any member of the council wishing to pull a consent calendar item? And any member of the public wishing to pull...
Hang on, Mayor. I was not in attendance for the joint meeting on the consent calendar item number one, but I was here for the meeting prior for the city council, so I can say yes to half.
Very good. And likewise, I'll ask the city clerk to acknowledge the meeting I have attended and meeting I have not, and record that accordingly. Any member of the public wishing to pull an item for further discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion on all items with the variance of Councilman Servant and myself that have missed a meeting or two.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Burbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
And Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. I think Dave's going to bring up my PowerPoint here in a moment. But in the meantime, I want to talk about the North County Farmers Market, which happens to be up there too. So we are reminding everyone that Atascadero's Farmer Market is now located at the Sunken Gardens. We're extremely pleased to have them back here at the Sunken Gardens, close to our downtown. They will be here every Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. So here in the Sunken Gardens, Wednesday, 3 to 6. Last week's grand opening of the Return of the Farmers Market to the Sunken Gardens was a terrific event with a great turnout. The community came out in force to support the grand opening event, including the high school jazz band and drumline, the Greyhound cheer team, the Greyhound mascot, and the Motions Academy of Dance. Booths and shoppers included representatives from the Friends of the Lake, North County Cycle, PEDS, the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, Parents for Joy, the Chamber of Commerce, as well as our city council and city staff. I know that city staff all took a break and headed out at different points and did a lot of shopping. It was very nice having them right here in our own backyard. Actually, I guess our front yard. The market had over 26 vendors selling a wide variety of produce, sausage, meats, honey, plants, flowers, bread, and the cookies were incredible. I had a piece of cookie that was good. But plan to get there early. On our grand opening, we had several vendors that did run out of product fairly early. They think they're all planning on getting quite as good a good turnout again this Wednesday, tomorrow, and so hopefully they'll have more items for purchase and nobody will run out, but we're excited. So it was very successful, and the farmers market was pleased with the results. We will also be adding entertainment to the market on the first Wednesday of each month. And if anyone has an interest in being involved at the market, please contact Terry Banish at 470-3490, or her email is tbanish@atascadero.org. We also had our conservation celebration this Saturday. This is the 8th annual conservation celebration at the Charles Paddock Zoo. The annual Party for the Planet highlighted topics like beekeeping, food waste recycling, and water conservation. In spite of the rainy weather and numerous competing activities held throughout the county, we had lots of kids and their parents who attended and enjoyed over 20 exhibitors while learning about conservation. Spring is a busy time here at the Charles Paddock Zoo. We have Spring Fest that coincided with the conservation celebration this year. The zoo continues to celebrate spring with our annual Spring Festival going on now through April 23rd. Everyone should come out and enjoy our baby farm animals, including chicks, bunnies, and goat kids. I have seen both the bunnies and the goat kids, and they're pretty darn adorable. Spring Fest is free with regular zoo admission. In addition, check out our new Madagascar exhibit with our rare collection of radiated tortoises, black parrots, and more. Zoo hours are from 10 to 5 p.m. now through October. Also at the Charles Paddock Zoo, one of my favorite events is Brew at the Zoo. Tickets for our third annual Brew at the Zoo are now on sale. They can be purchased online at visitatascadero.com or at the Chamber of Commerce or the zoo. This event will take place on Saturday, April 29th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. There will be a variety of craft beers, brews, wine, cider, and margaritas available. We'll have DJ Jerry Craig Entertainment, and it will include karaoke, hula hoop, and dance contest. All were very popular last year. Guests can also enjoy Banjer Dan and his bluegrass music on the banjo. There'll be a variety of food purchase, including barbecue, Thai, and Mexican food. For those that don't want to partake of the in the beer and wine, we will have root beer, A&W root beer, and Yes Artisan will be available with non-alcoholic beverages. We do have a designated driver ticket for those that won't be having any of the alcohol, so that's a good thing. Proceeds from the event support our conservation and educational efforts, and we invite all over 21 residents to come party with the animals on April 29th. So all of the beer and wine tasting is included in the price of the ticket. $30 will be your early bird price. I would suggest that if you're interested in attending this event, that you do purchase your tickets early because it is likely that it will sell out. If there are still available tickets available on the date, they will be $35 at the door. And I believe it's a $5 if you're a designated driver and don't want the wristband to taste the brews. We do ask that everyone, even the designated drivers, be over 21. So thank you. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the council may have.
Council questions. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Yes, you said there was going to be entertainment at the farmer's market. Are we going to see jugglers or music, or what is this going to be?
I think Terry has all sorts of good stuff in store for us. She's going to be rotating each first Wednesday of the month. It'll change as to what we have. I know that some of our public safety teams would like to also be at the farmer's market and do some educational outreach. So we're really looking at this as an opportunity to really get the community out, support the vendors, learn about Atascadero, and really enjoy our park and our sunken gardens.
Thank you.
Well, of course, the chief is no Terry Banish. However, I would think the canine unit would be a great demonstration some evening.
I'm sure if Terry hasn't hit him up, she certainly will.
Well, thank you. We'll move on next to Community Forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on any topic not on the agenda. And I did want to take a moment to acknowledge we don't just have a reporter from Atascadero News here tonight. We have the editor of Atascadero News tonight. Congratulations on that accomplishment and promotion, and you certainly have earned it, done a good job in our community. Thank you. And any word on the awards coming your way, maybe, for a photo, I hear? Very good. Good job, Luke. Well, next item, of course, is community forum. I would invite any member of the community to come forward at this time. And if none do, we will be closing community forum. Welcome. Just state your name for the record, and then you can also hand out anything to our city manager there for distribution.
Hi, my name is Jeff Lemoyne. I work for Smart 72. I'm a fourth year generation person here within the community. My great grandparents moved here in 1911, so my family's been here for some time. My family has owned small businesses here in Atascadero. My wife currently owns a bakery, my sister owns a preschool, and my grandfather an insurance agency here in Atascadero. I'm here speaking about the California First program, which is called PACE funding. It's something that I believe in. It's something that I feel that Atascadero should allow to continue to be present within Atascadero. I think it's a helpful item for people to be able to provide energy efficiency for their home. I believe in it so much that I have a California First loan on my own residence. My father as well, my sister as well. We've been able to put solar on our homes and avoid the increasing price that PG&E is basically slamming all the residents with. We've been able to upgrade with some energy efficiency items, such as a brand new heating and air conditioning system, ducting. I also did a panel upgrade with one of our homes as well. So there's been a lot of things that we've been able to fund through California First. I'd like to speak a little bit about the California First program because I believe there's some people that don't understand what it is. What California First is a government-funded program for the state of California, and it allows for homeowners to be able to fund for energy efficiency for their home. It funds for over 9,000 different energy-efficient products for your home, such as roof, windows, heating, air conditioning, ducting, insulation, things like that. Smart 72, I've been working there for 2 years now, and in doing that, the PACE program became present about a month after my employment. Since doing so, I believe we've funded a little more than $2 million just with my cooperation and helping customers within the counties that we operate and do business. One of the things that we also have to do is we have to adhere by the laws such as pulling permits and by doing Title 24 HERS testing and things like that. That's one of the requirements that California First requires, proof of documentation. With that documentation, we are abiding by the rules and the laws that are put before us to be able to follow. One of the comparisons that I have in looking at permits that have been pulled, starting in 2015, Smart 72 pulled a total of 13 permits within Atascadero. Other HVAC companies pulled a total of 27. So with us, we're about half of what is being pulled within the city, and we're only one company within the city. In 2016, we pulled 28 permits for heating and air conditioning systems. A total of 44 permits were pulled within Atascadero. In 2017, we pulled 3 permits in the city of Atascadero so far, and the competitors have only pulled 1. So I believe that having California First on board and having certain requirements mandated for the funding program also helps the community do things the right way, the way that they should be done. One of our customers that we helped,
if I may check in, that was our 3-minute limit. How much time do you need to conclude your comments?
Probably 2 more minutes.
Do we have, if I could see a show of hands of any other speakers for tonight on this topic? 2 more. Okay, I'm going to extend it to, let's cut it down another minute. We'll just kind of extend it to 4 minutes per speaker. We've got a couple more coming, and we'll listen quickly.
Yes, sir, I'll talk quickly. As far as the pros on California First, it's 100% state and federal funded. You get to write off the interest on this particular program if you're doing a long-form tax deduction. There is no credit score requirement, so people with a lower credit score but yet own their home, have been paying their mortgage faithfully, have been doing everything faithfully, can still qualify for this particular program. That's a huge incentive, especially for people who don't have income that might qualify for a HELOC or something along those lines. Just this morning, I helped somebody fund on California First where they needed a brand new heater, they added air conditioning, and they had asbestos ducting in their attic. That this program funded for that, and they had no other product that they could possibly turn to. I passed out paperwork for the lady mentioned in the paperwork. She had been without a roof for some time with a leaky roof, had major problems, could not sell her house, could not do anything with her house because she was on a limited income. She was a widow. That paperwork that I passed out basically describes exactly how this California First program helped that lady. Thank you.
Thank you. And if we have other speakers on that particular topic, it would be just as easy to group you all together. Please come forward. We'll hear from anyone that wants to speak tonight. So please come forward, though, thank you for going ahead and lining up. We can kind of keep it moving along, and that'll help on giving a little extra time. Go ahead. Please state your name for the record.
Name is Matt Walker. I am with Sunrun Solar. Mayor, City Council, thank you for having us here tonight. I want to briefly touch on California First and what it means to this community and to a lot of people out there. We have been in this community for 20 years installing solar, and there's a lot of people that we've had to turn away before just due to finances or multiple other reasons. California First is an excellent program. It's funded by California. It's a great way. It helps people actually be able to do energy efficiency programs to their homes to make their lives better, to save themselves money. It's a great program. Like I said, without it, there are dozens, probably hundreds of people just within this community that multiple companies, not just mine, but multiple companies, AM Solar, heating, air conditioning companies, Smart 72, we wouldn't be able to help those people. Everything that we do is about helping people save money. This program is just another addition to it. California First is great because of the oversight that they provide, not just for the companies, making sure that we're vetted, that we're doing what's right for the customers, but also giving that back to the customers and showing them that the companies that use California First and help put these projects in for them have already been vetted. They're there to help them. They're going to give them the best products possible to help them save money. Without California First, there's a lot of people out there who won't be able to save money, who won't be able to make their lives better. It's a necessary program, and we need to have it in this community.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Jeremy Huttman, and I'm the regional director for the California First PACE program. Good evening, Mayor O'Malley and city council members. California First is a PACE program that's brought to you by the League of California Cities. We've been active in Atascadero since 2014, and we've helped a lot of your constituents upgrade their homes and reduce their energy bills. Last month, you directed staff to bring back a resolution to opt out of our program, and we'd really like you to reconsider that decision. You haven't heard much about our program over the past few years, and it's not a coincidence. It's not that we're not active in the community. By design, we run a low-profile, very tightly controlled program. As a League of California Cities program, we focused on leading the industry in consumer protections and making sure that homeowners who use California First have a positive experience. We've always had clear disclosures, and we offer subordination, and we provide a concierge service before, during, and after a homeowner's upgrade. To date, 79 homeowners in Atascadero have used California First, and there's currently another 15 homeowners that are under construction right now. So it's very popular in the community, although we are kind of flying under the radar. And most of the projects will include a combination of solar, energy efficiency, like efficient air conditioners, and even water conservation measures like artificial turf. Like any good program, whenever we get any negative feedback from the community, we try to learn from it, and we incorporate it into our process. We try to improve our process, and we take everything as a learning experience to help our contractors as well. So we're very proud of California First and the program that we've created, and we really feel like we're meeting a need in the community. And one additional note with PACE is that we always talk about homeowners and PACE in relation to homeowners, but actually it also serves business owners, nonprofits, industrial, and agricultural. And this is a huge need, especially for small and medium businesses. Typically, small and medium businesses don't have investment-grade credit, so they have a really tough time finding long-term financing. They may be able to get up to 7 or 8 years, and that really makes it difficult for projects to pencil out. With PACE, we can offer up to 20 years, and we've actually had success in the community. We had a local winery recently use the California First program to finance a solar upgrade on their property, and we want to make this available or keep this available to all of your business owners as well. And so there's a lot of misinformation being circulated out in the community, and I know that you all want to know what's actually going on. So before you make any decisions on this, please hear from all of the your constituents in the community that have used California First and had a positive experience. We'll definitely encourage them to reach out to you. We have a lot of really happy homeowners here. So I have folders to pass out to you just with some additional information on the program.
If you just give it to our city manager or police chief there, they'll get it. Thank you.
There's a letter on each one of them that's addressed to each one of you, so we want to make sure that you all get the right one. It has information. Like I said, the League of California Cities is really leading the way on consumer protections for PACE. One of the items in there is an explanation of Senate Bill 242, which is sponsored by Nancy Skinner. It's in the Senate right now. It's going to further improve consumer protections and standardize this across the industry. So the League of California Cities supports this bill. We hope that you all will support it too. The California First program really sees the need for these additional consumer protections, and we're really excited to keep our program going in the city of Atascadero, and we look forward to coordinating with you as we continue the program. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any other speaker on the topic of solar financing or anything of that nature? You're welcome to this. It would be helpful to have it grouped together. We'll still continue on with city. And if there's anyone else, please come forward. Welcome.
Hello. This is my first city council appearance, so I'm honored. Thank you. My name is Derek Yellen, and I am a manager for Smart 72 as well. And I wanted to keep it simple and short and mention that I know solar is a big buzzword, and it's very exciting because it's one of those things that can actually save people money.
but what I want to focus on real quick is the essential services. Just to paint a quick picture, if you're on a fixed income, you may not be able to qualify for a very low interest rate loan or any loan at all, and your air conditioning breaks or your heater breaks, and you have no way to pay for it. Right now, this is the only solution, and I'm really grateful that California has put their efforts into supporting this kind of program. I'm not the only one with family. Jeff isn't the only one with family with the PACE loan. My dad, who's a retired attorney, he overthinks everything. He got a PACE loan because of the similar reasons. He's moving in about 3 to 5 years, and he went through all the analysis and determined that it was the right fit for him. So that was for a whole home retrofit. He did his air conditioning and his solar because he couldn't sell his house without bringing it up to market. So, and he's retired, and he's on a fixed income too. So people didn't want to throw money at him, but California First was able to fund the program, and I've had countless experiences with my personal clients and clients of my employees that have had the same experience, and I can picture, for lack of a better term, the little old ladies that I've actually helped, because they're real. The faces are real. You don't need to list names. I know them personally. They're in my phone. They text me questions about their system. How do I turn on the... Anyway, I digress, but I thank you guys for hearing us out, and I really do hope that this program continues, because it is also creating a lot of jobs, and that's always a good thing. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers on that topic? And we still have open community forum, so any other topic on an item that is not on our agenda? And seeing no one come forward, I'll close the community forum and bring it back to council. And we thank you always for bringing things to our attention. Without going into a lot of background, the reason we can't, of course, even discuss it or give directions is it's not on the agenda. And much like we had a couple of hearings beginning about PACE way back in 2010 and went through a series of meetings and open public input to implement that program, and later we had other similar programs come forward. We also had public hearings on that and declined to expand the program, and there was some concerns about looking at revisiting this particular program, and that's what we have done. Unless council changes that, we will be scheduling a time where we will revisit here, and I'm going to ask that our city manager include all the information we've heard tonight, just as part of that input for that upcoming meeting. And if you make sure that the city manager has your contact information, we'll let you know. I believe that is agenda specific, and I'm going to turn over to our city manager a little bit to respond, maybe with a little bit of history if you want, but focus on when we will have a discussion that'll be agendized, and that's where we will take action to either not make any changes or to make some changes. So, Ms. City Manager, could you expand a little bit on that and make sure folks understand when this will be coming back?
Well, I'll answer that question first. We are currently scheduled bringing this item back to you for the second meeting in May. I have to admit, I don't know the date right off the top of my head, so I'll let somebody else get that for me. 23rd, May 23rd, that'll be the Tuesday. And how this came about is in April of 2016, the City Council reviewed a proposal from the authorization of a HERO PACE program and the Y-Green PACE program providers in Atascadero. At that point, you had asked us, you took no action and kind of gave direction to both the Y-Green and the HERO representatives to reach out to some of the real estate community here in Atascadero and others, and then we would bring back the item. The item was brought back at the February 28, 2017 meeting. At that point, the City Council discussed the PACE programs, and you decided against approving both the HERO and the Y-Green PACE programs. And at that time, you requested that staff bring back a resolution to opt out of the California First program so that it was an even playing field. That is what staff has been working on. As I said, we'll bring it back to you in the second meeting in May for your consideration to decide whether or not you want to opt out of that program officially at that time. and we can include any documentation that we received tonight in that staff report, and we will provide that at that time.
Thank you. And I'd also direct anyone that wants to provide input at that meeting to, it's always a good idea to review the discussion that's occurred before. As you know, why it came to the council's attention was there were some problems in the community that was brought to our attention. There were a number of folks in the community that had concerns, and that's what we were attempting to address. So those, of course, would be things that would needed to be addressed, the problems that people were experiencing. I think the council would want to hear about that, and that would be a good place to start. But with that, I'd give the opportunity if council wants to offer any other direction to staff. Otherwise, I would leave it with what we have decided and make sure you are notified when that is agendized. And if there's any changes, be sure to let folks know. Well, thank you. We'll move on to the next item. We do not have any public hearings, and our first management report is the Groundwater Sustainability Agency participation, and I believe our city manager is going to make that report. I would like to acknowledge, however, though, that Mr. John Neal, who is the chief executive officer with the Itasio Mutual Water Company or something like that. General manager. Oh, general. Okay. And he's in the audience and available to answer any questions for council as well. Ms. City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. To summarize tonight, we're going to be talking about the possibility of the City of Atascadero's participation in a groundwater sustainability agency. I'm going to use a lot of acronyms tonight just because saying the whole thing gets a little bit long. The groundwater sustainability is referred to as a GSA. And so there will be three basic questions that I'm looking for council direction on tonight. The first one is, should the City of Atascadero participate in the Atascadero Basin GSA? Are we willing to be the government appointing authority for the Atascadero Mutual Water Company? And should we participate as a voting member of the GSA Executive Committee at a cost of 1%? So I'm going to go, I kind of put the cart before the horse, but I'm going to go through a lot of background. I know a lot of you guys are aware of this. We've been talking about the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act for some time now and getting updates from John Neal and other staff members for the last few years. You've been very busy working to try and make sure that our basin is sustainable here in Atascadero. The Sustainable Groundwater Management Act was adopted in 2014. It is lovingly referred to as SGMA, maybe not so lovingly. SGMA requires the formation of GSAs, Groundwater Sustainability Agencies, to manage groundwater supplies through the development of GSPs, groundwater sustainability plans, for medium and high priority basins. So let me go through this just a little bit once more. Sorry, bear with me. SGMA is Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. GSA is Groundwater Sustainability Agency. GSP is a groundwater sustainability plan. And sustainable under SGMA is the use of groundwater without causing undesirable results. Under SGMA, by June 30th of 2017, GSAs must be formed for all high and medium priority basins. By January 31st, 2020, we must have adopted our basins that are in critical overdraft must have adopted a groundwater sustainability plan. And by January 31st, 2022, GSPs must be adopted for medium and high priority basins. The medium and high priority basins are a designation given to a water basin by the state. The state evaluates the health of the basin and determines whether they're in critical overdraft, they're a high priority basin, and our high priority meaning They could be going into critical overdraft. They're in an overdraft position and medium priority basin. There's a lot of criteria that go into those, and if you have questions on that, I can refer to John Neal. The last date that we need to worry about is 20 years after adoption of the GSP, each basin needs to have achieved sustainability. That is the purpose of the GSP, is to achieve sustainability within 20 years of adoption. A little bit more information and background is the Atascadero Basin has been determined to be separate from the greater Paso Robles Basin. As you know, the Atascadero Basin had been lumped into the greater Paso Robles Basin for years at the DWR. The Department of Water Resources did look at that. Atascadero Mutual Water Company and Templeton Community Services District appealed to the Department of Water Resources and said, our basin is hydraulically separate from the greater Paso Robles Basin. The Rinconada Fault basically prevents, I'm trying to think of a word, not a substantial amount, there's not a substantial amount of water flow between the two basins. In fact, it's all in the alluvium layer rather than the deep water band layer. So the Atascadero Basin was declared a separate basin from the Paso Robles Basin. As such, we can form a groundwater sustainability agency for just the Atascadero Basin. There are several local agencies and pumpers that do overlie the basin. There's the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, the Templeton Community Services District, the City of Paso Robles. There are three other local water companies, and I actually think there's four. I missed one. I apologize. There are individual landowners that aren't a part of a water company. They're in parts of the county that overlie the basin. And, of course, the City of Atascadero, portions of the City of Atascadero overlie the basin. This map is in your staff report. I know it's kind of hard to see, but it does outline where the basin is and each of the jurisdictions. For the City of Atascadero, the City of Atascadero is that is most of that yellow section there, although it's a little bit different. That's mainly the Atascadero Mutual Water Company. But you see there's just a sliver over on the east side of the city that actually overlies the basin. However, the basin provides all of the water for the City of Atascadero residents. So once the Atascadero Basin was declared a separate basin in October of last year, October 2016, local agencies that overlie the basin started meeting to form a groundwater, to start discussions about forming a groundwater sustainability agency. We don't know what priority the Atascadero Basin is. Certainly, we believe it's a low or very low priority basin, and we're gathering information to send to the Department of Water Resources on that. But in the meantime, we have to continue moving forward with a groundwater sustainability agency in the event that we are deemed to be medium or high priority basin. They won't make a determination on the priority of the basin until after the deadline to form GSAs. So we've all been meeting to talk about forming a GSA. As a result of these staff meetings, there has been a draft agreement, memorandum of agreement, that has been circulating and we have been talking about. The memorandum agreement is a joint agreement. It does not establish a separate legal entity, but it instead is an agreement among the parties that are to that. The purpose of the agreement is to develop a groundwater sustainability plan. The agreement does not change the water rights or the land use rights of any of the individual participants. So the city, if it chose to participate, would continue to own, continue to have all the rights and responsibilities that it always has. It does allow unilateral withdrawal. It allows either voting or non-voting participation. There are some representatives that are proposed that would not vote, and there are some that would have votes, so they would participate in the executive committee but not vote on anything that comes before the committee. The votes are currently weighted in the draft proposal. The three large water pumping agencies, the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, the City of Paso Robles, and the Templeton Community Services Districts, all as the large water suppliers, would have a 20% vote. The City of Atascadero would have 13.3%. The County of San Luis, 16.67%, and the Templeton Community Services, the other participating parties, the four water companies, would have one representative that represented 10%. So I apologize. It would require a two-thirds majority vote for major actions of the GSA, including adoption of the Groundwater Sustainability Plan, any bylaws, budgets, amendments to the original MOA, all of those would require a two-thirds majority vote. There are costs to implementing and developing the GSP, and the current draft agreement proposes to allocate those costs based 80% on the amount of water that your agency pumps. The City of Atascadero does not pump any water, and then 20% based on land use. Once we run that formula through, these are the how the costs would be distributed. Atascadero Mutual Water Company would be paying 43% of the costs, the City of Atascadero 1%, and so on down the line. As I said, the original MOA is, its primary purpose is to develop the groundwater sustainability plan. The current cost estimate, which is on the conservative side, is around $500,000. We think that might be a little bit high, but you're dealing with the state and a lot of state regulations and a lot of unknowns. This is new ground. So it will vary, but we'd rather give you information that's on the high side than the low. So that is about $500,000. Before that is to develop the GSP. Before we actually implement the GSP, the agreement does call for the cost allocation to be reviewed. Again, at that point, you know, we could choose to opt out or not. We can actually opt out at any time with the draft that we're talking about. So that's a lot of background to get you to the point where I want to get some direction so that we can move forward. We would be bringing, if the city chooses to participate in the, or if you give me direction that you're thinking you would like to participate in the GSA, I'll be bringing back the actual memorandum of agreement to you on May 9th. We are trying to finalize a draft to bring to all of our boards, and so I just want to get a little direction before we finalize that draft and all the different boards look at that. We are not required to participate in a GSA. There is nothing that says the City of Atascadero must participate in the Groundwater Sustainability Agency for the Atascadero Basin. However, their local public agency is required to participate for the entire area of the basin. And a local public agency, for lack of a better term, is basically a governmental agency. So it would be us or the county or the state would do that. If there's any portion of the basin that is in an unmanaged area, an area where there is not a local government agency, a local public agency over that, the unmanaged portion could trigger the board designating the entire basin as probationary, which means we're subject to a lot more reporting, monitoring, and some of those types of things. In the staff report, I got a little bit different interpretation. There's a lot of different people that have a different interpretation on SGMA and what it means. I think I had said that, I can't remember exactly, but
that DWR would not allow the proposed GSA to cover the portion of the basin that lies within the Atascadero city limits unless the Atascadero participates in the GSA. They would allow us to, they wouldn't put us on probation. They'd allow the GSA to form, but the basin would be on probation if we don't allow the county to be the local agency over it. So basically, if we choose not to participate, the county is designated as the local public agency over the area of the basin that's within the city limits. And if the county chooses not to participate and say they won't take that responsibility, then the state steps in. So that's complicated, so I apologize. What would it take to be a member? It will take staff time. And council member time and other city resources would be devoted to water. We're currently not in the water business. So this would be a new undertaking, a new program of work that we are looking at. And we would be subject to potential water litigation. As I said, this isn't an entity. Somebody that was unhappy with water decision wouldn't sue the GSA, they would sue each individual member. So there is that potential. However, if we choose not to participate, we have no say in how water is managed in the Atascadero Basin. And there are quite a few powers that are given to a GSA and that type of thing. The next thing is a little odd to me. And is should the city appoint the Atascadero Mutual Water Company representative? I think most of us would think that Atascadero Mutual Water Company would get to appoint their own representative. However, under SGMA, a local public agency must approve any representatives to the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. So either the city of Atascadero, if they were a member of the GSA, they could approve their member. Templeton Community Services could, or the county of San Luis Obispo, or even the city of Paso Robles, as my understanding, could also do it. What the draft report proposes is that the city of Atascadero confirm the Mutual Water Company's representative. So the Mutual Water Company would nominate a representative from their board to the city council. The city council could either confirm or deny that representative and say, no, we don't want that to be the representative of the Mutual Water Company, and these are the reasons why. Atascadero Mutual Water would then come back with another nominee. Or you guys confirm their nomination, and we're good to go. There will be staff time in preparing the item, the agenda item, for the council, but we plan on relying on the Mutual Water Company quite a bit for assistance in that, so I don't think it will be significant. And the last question is, should the city be a voting member? There are non-voting members. They may participate in the GSA, they may attend the meetings, they may be able to participate in discussions. However, they have zero say in adopting the GSP, in voting on any item before the GSA Executive Committee. The benefit of being a non-voting member is none of the non-voting members share in the costs. So what has been negotiated or talked about is that voting members would share the cost, and I think I shared these with you before. The city of Atascadero would be responsible for 1% of the cost. If we're looking at a $500,000 cost to develop the GSP and administer it to get through development of the GSP, that would be a maximum cost of about $5,000 over the next 2 to 3 years. And again, the city would receive a 13.33% vote. So what I'm asking, what the staff recommendation is that you direct staff to bring back for council consideration a memorandum of agreement with the other participating entities, forming a groundwater sustainability agency for Atascadero Basin at the May 9th, 2017 meeting. And then as part of that agreement, that you're looking for an agreement that includes the city as a participating party, the agreement provides for the city to be the governmental agency appointing the representative for the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, and that the agreement includes the city as a voting party at a cost of 1%. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. We also have John Neal here, and I will let him answer more of the technical Sigma questions and water questions.
Thank you. Well, good job on a complex subject. We will have a number of council questions. We may have questions from the audience. How I'd like to proceed is, first, we'll have all council questions directed to the city manager. You'll either respond and give an answer or defer perhaps to the city engineer or Mr. Neal. You probably can triage that best. And also, Mr. Neal, if you were wanting to be close to the lectern, because I do think you'll get a question or two, if at the conclusion of the city manager's response to a question, if you have something you would like to weigh in on that, I would invite you to do that. So it's kind of a tag team. I'll just let the city manager kind of triage that response. And again, I would ask council to keep it to questions of staff. When we conclude questions by council, normally we do not go into any deliberation before public input. However, I do want to have an extra time period, and especially I'm going to be looking to Councilwoman Fonzie, because I'm going to call it like ex parte. The fact is, there's a lot of stuff going on. We've participated in meetings outside of this public process. Myself, Councilwoman Fonzie, probably more than others, and probably Councilwoman Fonzie the most on the subject of water. So after we've heard all of the staff, council's exhausted any questions they have, if there's anything that you'd like to add at that time before we go to public, so that folks kind of have a broader background, because it's very complicated, and we've really been working on this for some time. So with that as kind of a framework, I'll go ahead and look to the lights and just go through council questions as they come. First, we have Councilman Sturtevant, followed by Councilwoman Fonzie.
My question is, when it comes to cost, you talk about the 1%, is there any known cost going forward for the plan year after year, annually, or anything else that we know about other than possible lawsuits?
It will really depend. We do not know what the costs are. It will really depend on what is in the groundwater sustainability plan, because the plan will lay out what actions we need to take, what monitoring, and what types of things we're looking for. Until we develop that plan, there won't be other significant costs. There will be a little bit of administration, publishing, noticing, those types of things. And then the plan will really outlay that. We are hopeful that because our basin is so well managed, and because we are in good shape, that there will not be significant costs in implementing the plan. And I probably will turn that over to Mr. Neal to talk a little bit more about what types of things we do have in place and what types of things we would expect as part of the GSP.
Thank you.
Yeah, as far as implementation, it's the parties have, John Neal, General Manager at Atascadero Mutual. As far as implementation, the parties are approaching this assuming that we can fulfill the requirements of the sustainability plan within lieu services. We anticipate, because the basin is healthy, that it is really going to be a reporting and monitoring type scenario into the foreseeable future. We're in a unique position in the Atascadero Basin in so much as you have water purveyors like the Water Company and Templeton Community Service District that are staffed to do these things. And we feel that we can just absorb that work, and hopefully that will meet the needs of the state. I mean, I file reports to the state on a routine basis on water use, number of services, et cetera. I think monitoring another dozen wells in the basin and reporting on the health of it is not going to be overly burdensome to us. And I also think during the plan development stage, we could look to in-lieu contributions from the city. A good example is like the meeting we had last week. If the city could allow us to use the pavilion or this room for public meetings, that's an in-lieu service, and it won't be a cash, but it will certainly be a benefit to the GSA.
Very good. Any other questions, Councilwoman Fonzie?
Thank you. I think this question would be for Rochelle. Obviously, land use has a tie-in with water use. Let's say we decided as a city council, because we have that prerogative, to build a hotel or a large subdivision, whatever it may be. If we were not to participate, would the GSA be able to regulate that water amount?
The SGMA does have some provisions for GSAs to review land use decisions, particularly general plan amendments. It's a fairly general statement, I would say.
Yes.
We're not exactly sure what that means yet, but certainly general plan amendments, significant land use decisions may come before the GSA Executive Committee for review. We're all going to learn a lot as this goes along.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be fairly significant effect if we may want to be at the table. This question would be for John Neal. There's a 13.33% vote that Atascadero would have if we participate in the GSA, but yet the cost is only 1%. Can you explain how they came up with that difference in the percentages?
It was an interesting process. We went through either 8 or 9 different scenarios with the cost sharing. Some of them just didn't make sense. They didn't feel that they were fair. One of them was just divide the cost up among the entities that are participating. Well, for small entities like the small mutual water companies, their costs would have been beyond what they could handle. Then we look simply at pumping. That in itself, it seems like on the surface, that would be the perfect way to do this, but it's not a straightforward equation. For example, Paso Robles pumping in the Atascadero Basin is primarily surface water. So it's not technically subject to SGMA. So arguably, Paso Robles could say, we don't pump any water, so our cost share should be zero. So we said, let's take a step back. Let's just look at pumping as the county reports it in its groundwater model update and just use that as a basis. So we did that. Then the pumping, the ratios were somewhat different. I think Atascadero Mutual at that point picked up 49%. The county share was 4.5%, and then the others adjusted accordingly. Then a discussion came up at the with the group that was meeting there. Well, land use drives a lot of what's happening out here. The county's making land use decisions that affect both pumping in the county, and they can also affect what happens in the city. Their decisions can force growth into the city. So we thought that it would be reasonable to add a land use component, make a hybrid model, so to speak. We used an 80-20 split. Again, it was a matter of this, with the group that was sitting there, it felt reasonable and fair. And so that's how we came up with the cost ratios that we did. So it's not a perfect science. We looked at other alternatives, and they really just didn't make sense.
And other GSAs in the county can use whatever model they choose. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. One last question. And I'm just wondering what happens if DWR decides that we're a low-priority district. We've done the plans, we're participating. Do we stay in place or do we dissolve, or how does this get treated?
Well, that's up to the group. Okay. That's up to the group. We could, if they say it's a low priority basin, we don't have to conform to SGMA. My personal feeling is we have a certain amount of momentum right now to get a plan in place. We have the group sitting around talking. You've been a great help in that, facilitating those discussions. Now would be the time to come up with a plan that works for us. We're not doing it in a state of duress. We don't have a stressed basin. And it would help everybody in the basin have something, give them some roadmap to the future. But that's a decision that we would have to make at that time.
Thank you.
Very good. We have Councilwoman Moreno. Any other questions, please use the lights. Thank you.
So if the city decided to be a non-voting member, does that mean that we would still abdicate to the next governmental agency in terms of potential land use or other issues?
No, we would be a participating member, and so that is my understanding based on my discussions that we don't necessarily abdicate to the county on land use. What it does mean is that we don't have a say in development of the GSP. We don't have a vote. Certainly we will be heard, but no voting power on that.
But in 103 years of the Atascadero Mutual Water Company and the city of Atascadero, the city of Atascadero has never had any voting when it comes to water, correct?
Correct. However, groundwater sustainability plans is kind of a new area because they do have some review of land use and some of those things. It is somewhat bleeding into areas where the city has had historical autonomy, but you are correct.
So then it isn't correct that if we aren't a voting member, then we do in some way abdicate any potential land use determinations that could be made by SGMA.
Okay, I was just confused by that statement. Too many. So
I was asking, yeah. If we were a non-voting member, does that mean any land use decisions that SGMA might have, we then abdicate that to the next government, so the county or the state? Or do
the city would still always make land use decisions, whether we're a member or a not. Some section of land use decisions, and we're not sure what that is, may be reviewed by the groundwater sustainability agency and the voting members.
Okay, so if we were a non-voting member, we could have basically a non-voting member. It kind of sounds like John is maybe like the public coming to public comment at a meeting. That's what a non-voting member is.
Yeah, you would be part of the deliberations of the executive committee, but you would not have a vote.
Okay.
So you could have discussions like you are right now at the dais.
Okay.
One way that I look at it, if the city will have some involvement with the management of a resource that potentially affects land use decisions. That's the way I characterize it. It's not going to affect your ability to make those land use decisions, but the way the resource gets managed may have an impact on those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Could we hold off on the GSP and see, I mean, if you put it together, now let me start with the GSA, first of all. Is there any way to ask for an extension until we do have a determination?
No.
No.
No. All right. Then can we, how soon do we have to have the GSP? Was that the January 30th, 2020 number or something?
Right. The state, when they separated the Atascadero Basin mm-hmm. from the Paso Basin, they took the critically overdrafted designation off of the Atascadero Basin. So we have till 2022.
Okay.
So from a cash flow standpoint, you're looking at a $5,000 expenditure over almost 5 years.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I won't get into that, but very true. And I'm assuming this is something that the whole organization would decide, but I'm thinking that within that GSP, you could set the plan, but nothing triggers until, you know, like you reach a certain step of like getting towards determinant.
Okay. I have a vision of the way a sustainability plan should work in the Atascadero Basin, and I've shared this over the last 3 or 4 years. I voiced it last Wednesday in front of the state. They didn't have any negative feedback, but it would be, the way I look at it, it would be set up sort of like a drought, water shortage condition scenario. You would have multiple stages. Stage one is the simplest. You just monitor and report. If things are healthy, if there's no year-over-year decline in groundwater levels, plan's working, we're sustainable. Stage two, if we see that there is a year-over-year decline in groundwater levels. And I'm not talking seasonal variations or variations like we talked about in the drought. If you see those water levels declining, then the larger water purveyors should step up to the plate and heighten their conservation efforts like we just recently did. Well, we were mandated to by the state. But we did, and it was very successful. We cut our water use by 25%. Maybe that's sufficient. If it's not, we still see a year-over-year decline. Well, let's bring in more imported water. We have the ability to do that. Granted, it's more expensive. I mean, Nacimiento water is not cheap, but we have 3,244 acre-feet available to recharge the basin. In a low production year like we've seen, that nearly meets my entire demand for the year.
Exactly. Okay.
Okay, so now you're at stage three. If you continue to see a year-over-year decline, now we're going to have to go and step outside of our respective service areas, talk to people in the county, probably the large ag pumpers along the river, ask them to reduce their use. And if we're in a 50-year drought cycle, things are then everybody's going to have to step up to the plate. Okay. And that's the way the vision I have for a plan. It would be very, and talking to people that are very familiar with the State Water Board folks that are making up the rules, they're looking for a plan that includes these trigger points.
Right. Okay.
And so that's what we've been pushing forward. That's the concept we've had from day one with the Atascadero Basin.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Burbo.
Yes, well, thank you. Your explanation kind of just answered one of my questions, which is, you know, what actions would be likely to be called for in the plan itself, and you've laid it out very succinctly, which makes me wonder, why would the potential plan cost $500,000?
We don't believe it will, but there are a lot of unknowns. We have a lot of good information on the Atascadero Basin. We know the geology. We had to prove that up that geology to a very high degree to have the state convinced that there is a sustainable barrier to the flow of groundwater between the Atascadero Basin and the Paso Robles Basin. What we don't know is how they're going to want us to address what they're calling undesirable results. One of those is seawater intrusion. Will they just accept the paragraph, not an issue? Or are they going to make us go through this full-blown analysis? Another one is ground subsidence. We see groundwater levels fluctuate. We don't see ground subsidence like they're seeing in the Central Valley, where I think it's Merced, where the ground's dropped 30 feet. If that were happening in this area, our wells would start projecting out of the ground because they're founded in bedrock. The casings go all the way to the Monterey Shale, and the ground would be sinking around them. Are we able to go, hey, we see anecdotally this isn't an issue. Is that okay? Are they going to want some more robust analysis? The one analysis in there is surface water groundwater interaction. That's one of the undesirable results. That's going to take some analysis. They're going to be looking for a sustainable yield in the Atascadero Basin. We have one that was generated back in 2002. Is that going to be good enough, or are we going to have to revisit that? And those are the unknowns. We sat around the table. We said, well, we talked to consultants that prepare these types of plans, although the rules aren't 100% finalized, what the plans need to contain. And they gave us, based on their best ability, a round number of $500,000. And you'll see that throughout the county. That's sort of the standard number we're using.
Right. And I understand if that was kind of a standard for the plan, and hopefully they would understand that saltwater intrusion is not an issue in our case, but yes. I could see you're dealing with the state, and they'll want you to spend $50,000 to prove it or something. Although, you know, our share at 1% is not significant. What I was kind of curious, though, is in terms of the measures that you outlined as a possible plan, how to, you know, deal with water shortages at different levels, what I wanted to understand is the potential cost of those measures and whether those would impact the city of Atascadero.
I don't see how they would impact. Okay. They certainly impact me when I get into conservation mode, my water sales drop.
Right. So, bottom for you, I mean, the actions that could potentially be called for in a plan would really fall on you, not us.
They're going to primarily fall on, like I said, those first stages are going to fall on the water purveyors. We're doing a lot of that already, and that's why the basin's healthy.
Okay.
And then we just got to package it up in a manner that the state's going to accept it. And we're not looking for an A-plus plan here. If I get a C-minus on my sustainability plan, I'm going to be very happy.
Right. Passing grade is great. Now, so in terms of, you know, it hasn't been determined what our priority is yet, and it sounds like based upon all the, you know, good things that happen in our basin, we could be a low or even a very low priority. You're the one, or not just you, I assume, but the other, you know, Templeton Community Services District, et cetera, but you're probably taking the lead in trying to convince the state that we're a low or very low priority?
Yes, yeah, so I've already authored a letter that was co-signed by Templeton, providing information to the Department of Water Resources that indicate we are in a low priority. That was primarily based on the most recent groundwater model update by the county. Their projections through year 2040 are we more than meet our basin, what they call basin management objectives. We have more water in the basin than we're going to be using. And that's assuming they use the term 1% growth rate. And Rochelle got a little upset. And that's actually a 1% escalation in water use. In our case, we're seeing a year-over-year decline in annual production anyway, without conservation measures being, you know, heavily implemented.
Right.
And we have the groundwater model prepared by the county only assumed that we would take 2,000 acre-feet of nonsedimental water. We have 3,200 acre-feet available.
And if we come back as a low or very low priority, that pushes the need for a plan off farther into the future? Or if you get very low, does it negate the need for a plan altogether?
It's hard to... It's not subject to the current SGMA requirements. My guess is, though, now that we're on this path in the state, they're going to look at every basin and are going to say, well, it's sustainable now. How are you going to keep it sustainable? So I think you're going to get it in a situation, even in a low-priority basin, where at some point in time the state's going to come in and say, we want a plan from you. You know how these things swell.
Got it. And then my last question, and maybe it's really more for the city manager or even the city attorney, is, you know, in the city manager's presentation, you talk specifically about exposure to litigation just by virtue of being a member, because the agency is probably the wrong name. It's not really an entity. It's really an agreement. And therefore, by being a member of the memorandum, you're subject to litigation. So somebody doesn't like what a decision the GSA made, we could be named in a suit. I'm trying to understand what kind of suit this might be, what our exposure is in that regard. Because obviously the cost, $5,000, is pretty minuscule for us. We get 13% voting for 1% cost. It's a good deal. What's the risk?
I think it would be hard to articulate exactly what types of lawsuits, water lawsuits, that we will see in the future. Certainly... there is a lot of water litigation. Water is a huge body of litigation within the state of California. I would imagine as more and more concern and the GSPs in those critically overdraft areas get more and more tight, that there will be a lot more water litigation.
Sure.
Exactly what form that takes, I don't know. Exactly, you know, how much the city is actually would have to participate, we don't know. I mean, we do have ways where if it was something similar to the Steinbeck lawsuit, we could just quit claim everything and we're good. I don't think that there's a lot of city exposure as in our liability, but there is city exposure in that we would be involved and would have to participate in defending that to some extent.
Okay. And that, I guess, kind of the specific question, because you don't know what the kind of litigation would be, but does the memorandum of understanding or agreement spell out who, you know, which of the participating agencies and to what degree they're responsible for paying litigation costs? Because I don't want to be a 1% coster and then have to pay, 13% of the litigation, or regardless of how, spurious the litigation might be.
Because the memorandum agreement does not have who's going to pay what percentage of litigation costs. It is, again, a group of legal entities that are joining together under an agreement. So it is my understanding that, in theory, somebody would most likely name each of the participating parties or some of the participating parties. And then we would get together and talk about a potential of a joint defense at that time if all of our interests are aligned still, and discuss costs at that point.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Attorney, do you have any comment on that?
No, I thought Rochelle set it forth very clearly. I don't really have anything to add to what you said, other than to confirm that you never know what the litigation, yes. what the scope of the litigation would be, who the parties would be, what the legal theories are. It would have to be something that's going to be evaluated at the time it's filed.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other council questions? I don't see any lights, so I will add a few thoughts from my involvement on some water meetings, turn it over to Councilman Fonsi. Well, I think this is similar to ex parte, that we've actually been involved in input outside of this public process. So just so folks kind of have a feel for the complexity, for example, you're sitting on LAFCO. We've been on a couple of specially formed committees dealing with this, just so the public is a little bit aware of that. I was feeling, because I'm feeling like staff has done a very good job on coming to this. I've always said, thank you, Lord, for E.G. Lewis, because setting up the Itasio Mutual Water Company in the way that it has been set up for over 100 years ago, it's probably one of the best managed organizations dealing with water in the state, and we're very fortunate. And I do think the reason the city needs to be involved is we also, you know, have a symbiotic relationship. We don't have decision-making over water. However, we do make decisions about a land use, and that impacts the use of water. We certainly involved in policy and procedures, which dovetail nicely with the water company, because our, for example, over-the-counter gray water systems, permit process, how we manage septic systems, these all interrelate with water quality and also replenishing, in a sense, the groundwater. If you look at our wastewater treatment plant, again, lowest cost in the county, but it also percolates right back into the water basin. And you could almost think of us as a water purveyor in that sense, because we're reusing that water. So those decisions by an entity do impact and interact with water. I think the fourth area that I think why we should participate has to do with relationships. I think it's almost the most important issue. It's a very unique situation we have, and I think it's actually worked to our benefit. The water company's done a good job of managing. However, because of the nature of their organization, they really can't take the lead on some of these government relationships. We have a good relationship with community service districts. A number of folks have tried to work on these organizations and ended up in lawsuits are individuals that have never had to work together particularly. We, on the other hand, in jurisdictions, have to work together all of the time. And we have the City of Paso Robles, the City of Atascadero, the Templeton Community Service District, certainly the county. We are used to interacting on boards together, and we have this communication and understand that we're all at risk and we have to work together. So I think those relationships is kind of why we've been able to get closer to forming this than really anybody else in the county that I can see, and on a larger scope. And so I think that's been a plus. I was involved early on, really more in this area, in working with John, bringing in the City of Paso Robles. We had numerous meetings between the mayors and the city managers trying to say, well, let's work together instead of trying to go it alone. And then Templeton was very amenable. They were a leader, I think, like our water company, in being collaborative. And then we think with our own Roberta Fonzi, too, we basically said as a council, let's have her kind of take a lead, and she's done a great job participating in across multiple agencies. LAFCO is just one, but I did want to ask her to speak a little bit of some of the involvement she's had, because that's really helped us to get to where we are as well as with the water company's leadership. So just a little bit of background touching on some of the things that might share why this kind of a mutual relationship is something to consider.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, water has been an interest of mine for many years, because having lived in many places in the world and in the United States, married to a man in the military, I've seen the impact that water or lack thereof can have on cities. I have been serving as your water representative for a couple years. It's been really interesting for me. I've learned a lot. I've sat on the Water Resources Advisory Committee, RAC, which talks mainly about conservation, but has an advisory body to the Board of Supervisors. I've met with all of the city, the county supervisors to talk about water and water districts, in particular with LAFCO. And we saw the big Paso Robles water district that went down in a vote, and I took a position on that. My position was no, for various reasons, but I didn't think it was necessarily good for those who were in the area. And have recently been involved with the formation of two water districts in the eastern part of the county, one out by Shannon, one in the El Pomar Creston area that will be fairly near 2 hours. And this is a big problem. You know, the Paso Robles groundwater basin is huge. Thankfully, we were able to separate and show that we had separation, or we would have been lumped in with that. And I think that Atascadero, and particularly John Neal and the Mutual Water Company, fought hard for Atascadero to keep us out of that. And I think that was actually probably the best thing that could have happened to us, because otherwise we would be sitting in an area that was considered to be very high in terms of priority. In terms of this sharing, I want you to give some thought to the idea that there are those in the county that have been so wanting to be having a seat at the table, so to speak, on the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Advisory GSA, that they're willing to form special districts. And I think that's worth thinking about. To have a seat at the table is to have a say in land use. It'll have a say in how water is distributed from Nacimiento, or it could be lots of other things that we don't even know at this point in time. That I look down the road and see the possibility that a GSA could be somewhat like the Regional Coastal Commission and have a much broader power that is given to it by the state. And so for that reason, I think it's very important for Atascadero to have a seat at this table, to have a say. And when you look at your table here about the percentages, and this would be the weighted votes, if we were not a weighted vote, that would be 13.33% that we would take out of there. Paso Robles and the Mutual Water Company would have a vote, and we would not. You add up the 20% for Mutual Water Company and City of Atascadero, it suddenly becomes 43.33% vote. That's a sizable vote on the GSA, and it would affect our future very definitely. The cost is minimal at 1%, so personally, I think we need to look beyond our pocketbook at this point in time, look beyond the litigation, and look to the future and our residents' needs and make sure that their needs and their concerns are represented well. So I would recommend, and this is just me as a council member, that we go ahead with this and we participate.
Thank you. And again, usually I'm loath to make recommendations or conclusions before public comment, but since we have very little public left in any case, I do think, well, of course we have John Neal. I think this is something that is very significant and important, and I too have concluded that this is something very important to consider, and I want to say that before any public comment, because I would like feedback to that we have looked at this and we feel strongly this is something the city should consider. So we need input. If anyone has an alternate opinion, we need that feedback. So if there's another council input, I am going to open it up to the public, get any public input there is on this, then we'll bring it back for a potential vote. Any other comments you would like to make, Mr. Neal?
John Neal, General Manager of the Atascadero Mutual Water Company. I would encourage you to participate in the formation of a GSA for the Atascadero Basin. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public or media or staff would like to offer some input? Seeing no one come forward, I will close public comment, bring it back to council, and I would suggest, is there any other deliberation? I would like to offer Councilman Fonzie the opportunity to make the motion when we are at that point. But Councilman Moreno.
Well, I was going to make it, but I will wait to second it. I will just say I'm loath to do this simply because it's government forcing us to do more government and more layers of bureaucracy and more cost, which eventually gets passed down to all of us, right, to the ratepayers and everything. So I'm unhappy that this is before us, but I agree with my colleagues that this is really the best decision for the city and the residents of Atascadero with what is being forced upon us. So I will agree.
Thank you. Any other council input before we go to a motion? Do I have a motion?
Thank you. I move that council direct staff to bring back for council consideration a memorandum of agreement with other participating entities forming a groundwater sustainability agency for the Atascadero Basin on May 9th, 2017, according to staff recommendation.
I will second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. That is the conclusion of all of our action items. We will move on to council announcements and reports. And I will any council announcements or reports prior to going to committee reports? I will defer. Let's go ahead with committee reports. And I will defer on the City Schools Committee to Councilman Sturtevant and defer on the Mayor's Roundtable to, I guess, no one this time, because unfortunately we all had other meetings to attend and missed this last Mayor's Roundtable, which dealt with the topic of marijuana and other what other cities are considering. However, we will participate in considerable input on that topic and can get caught up from that discussion. I will defer to the Council of Governments, which with my surgery, I missed the last meeting, and Councilman Moreno attended for me, so I'll defer to you for that report. I will attend the Executive Committee for the Regional Transit Authority tomorrow, and we have had a meeting with the Integrated Waste Management Authority. I do expect that there's a lot of issues going on there all the time. But one, of course, is the question about legislating regarding styrofoam will be coming back. The IWMA, Integrated Waste Management Authority, did defer discussion of any kind of a countywide ordinance on that unless a majority of the cities enacted some kind of an ordinance. And I've always felt that I would rather see some countywide solution rather than individual cities, because it gets very tough on businesses when everybody is doing something different city to city. And however, we have not considered this before, though we have had folks come before the council asking us to. I believe there's three cities that have enacted some form of ordinance on this, and there's a lot of folks seeking to see who the fourth city will be that will trigger it then being considered an Integrated Waste Management Authority. I have asked our city manager to look into what was done in Pismo Beach, because I think it was probably something more similar to what our council would consider. And our council may want to consider looking at that in the future, because whoever that fourth city trigger is, if it tends to be folks that are more in favor of it, it's going to be more likely be something less in the realm of solution that this city council would like to see in their community, and that will probably push the Integrated Waste Management Authority to do something broader than the city might consider. So that's one reason you might want to consider looking at it sooner. And I've asked our city manager to at least take a look at what Pismo Beach did and get that distributed to council just for your reading pleasure. And we'll see if anything comes of that down the road. I will defer then to our Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie for your reports.
Thank you. Going to the Air Pollution Control District, the APCD is expecting some changes to come down from the federal government regarding air quality. The California's air quality standards are much higher than other parts of the United States, particularly in terms of automobile gas standards. You may have heard about this CAFE standard, they're calling it. And so I'll keep you posted on that when these air purity standards may loosen up in our area, and it may actually affect our air quality, and it may affect our pocketbook. We don't really know at this point in time. But look to the federal government, and we'll see what happens. For the Local Agency Formation Commission, there was a long hearing last week, and the Estrella, El Pomar, Creston Water District was voted for formation. I must say that I did not vote for it. It wasn't because I was not in favor of local control or forming the district per se. It was that the type of district that was being formed was based on acreage. And so if you had 100 acres, you got 100 votes. If you were the little guy and you had 10 acres or 5 acres, you had very little influence on costs that may come down and other issues. So that was my rationale for voting no, as well as Debbie Arnold, our supervisor. The City of Atascadero Design Review Committee recently reviewed the La Plaza project, and I'll let Charles Burbeau tell us about that one, but it looks pretty good. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Burbeau.
Okay, well, yes, that was an interesting meeting. It's kind of exciting to see the owners put forth some visual proposals for the what was called the Hoff property there on El Camino Real across from the Sunken Gardens, now including the Jack in the Box property, which it had not previously included, and their attempts to also include the Founders Bank property and the car stereo place on the corner. And I understand now that they have obtained the car stereo place on the corner, so that would be a very good addition. But the project itself would contain mixed use with commercial activities on the ground floor with residential on the top floor. And top two floors, and it's a very nice looking project. The design review committee's provided some comments back to them on the appearance, discussed the parking, what the parking situation might be, and gave them some guidance relative to the openness to accepting perhaps exceeding the height limitations that currently exist in downtown. But it's very exciting to see the potential for what could be a really critical piece of downtown development.
If I could ask a question either for you or for our city manager, this may not be the time for an answer, but I do know there's been an issue about residents close to establishments serving alcohol and possible limitations with alcohol ABC. Is that a time we could get a report back on that sometime, or is there a current status you could tell us about?
Well, how about if I start with a current status?
Okay.
We have found out that ABC has discretion to limit alcohol sales if their residence is within a certain number of feet. I think there's two triggers, either 100 or 500 feet. Here in the city of Atascadero, they have chosen to limit alcohol sales to 10 p.m., and at that point that establishments serving alcohol would have to stop if there are residential areas around that. This is different than jurisdictions around us. We are trying to set up a meeting with ABC representatives to find out, you know, why we're at 10 p.m. and others may be till 2 a.m. or not have any restrictions. And really find out what some of their concerns are. Certainly, if development such as the Plaza that does have a residential component that may limit the type of tenants in that commercial component or restaurants or other things, we want to understand that and bring it to the council to see if there's any action that you can take that might help influence any policy. So let us start with a couple of meetings with ABC, and then we will probably be bringing something back before you.
And I would like to be included. I know when something similar had come up in the past, we were able to, at the time, involve our assembly person, who was Cacho at the time, and help intervene with this organization And I think we do have to really make sure we are getting a fair treatment compared to other cities. It seems very unusual that we would be having a different set of rules than our neighbors. And it would have a significant impact in the direction things are going in our downtown. It would certainly impact a decision such as this. And I think even the owners would have some concerns, having the intention of having a restaurant and I'm sure serving alcohol there. That could have a great impact on downtown and the direction things have been going. So thank you for being on top of that. Anything else, Councilman Barbeau?
Well, not on the DRC, but I...
Continue with your...
Actually, no, I have nothing because I'll defer to Councilmember Moreno, who's the chair of the Finance Committee.
Excellent decision. And that takes us to Councilmember Moreno.
I would say I know we're not discussing the ABC thing, but I mean, another issue, of course, would be businesses that are already in place that could be within. So, okay, great. Just make sure that's taken
care of. Yes.
So, yes, we have our, so just so the public knows, we have a 2-year budget cycle. And so we start the budgeting process right about now for July 1, 2017 through June 30, 2019. And so Councilmember Barbeau and I are on that committee, and we're going to have our first meeting, just sort of a lay of the land. Here's what's going on. We plan for about an hour, and it's this Thursday the 13th, room 106 downstairs from at 4:30, 4:30 to 5:30. So members of the public are welcome, and look forward to kicking that off with Director Rangel. And our city manager, of course, and our treasurer. Let's see. So in attending SLOCOG for the mayor, the only, two things I'd say maybe that were of note. One, SLOCOG has had an agreement with Ride-On for a couple of decades, about 25 years. And there have just been some issues and a bit of a challenging relationship, it seems like, over time. And so what they do is they have a senior shuttle and veteran services and different transportation needs throughout the county that they meet. And what SLOCOG has decided to do is to fund them fully through the end of this calendar year. And in the meantime, go out to bid for those services, which Ride-On can certainly... come to the table and request that. So what I don't want people to think is that suddenly all these services are going away. SLOCOG will be in process over the next 9 months of figuring out, okay, who is going to be the provider. And there are providers available, but it's just gathering those RFPs or putting out the RFP and gathering in the bids and seeing what will be a fit for the various services that need to be delivered. And then the other really just had to do with legislation. There were about 15 legislative items. Of course, by the time they got two of us, one of them had nothing to do any longer with transportation, so we took that off. Just kind of voted up or down whether we were for or against SLOCOG. Being in favor of those, and you can probably imagine how that went. Most people voted for them, but I think we were about an 8-4 in terms of approving those, and not approving, but recommending. And I think most of SB1 passed, and so we're looking at more taxes and not as much money coming back to local governments that's been taken away by the state as we would have hoped.
Thank you. I'll just add to that a little bit with SLOCOG is I think in the past they have taken more of a stance on a legislative platform, and really a number of us in just the last couple of years have pushed more to just not take a position on legislation at the state level for one very basic reason. It changes so fast that you may support something at an early stage, and by the time it comes out the other end, it's unrecognizable. So, and there you are on record of supporting something. I, of course, would have loved to have seen, I think we needed to see, some bipartisan solution on transportation. That was not going to happen. And that was pretty clear early on. And so I think earlier forms of some of those on both parties, both houses, had some promise, but it was something entirely different. that we ended up with, and we hope for the best on that. I do think that'll be interesting to see. I do want to touch a little bit on the ride on. And as Councilwoman Moreno said, for those that understand, there's a lot of health and human service organizations that depend on the specialty transportation. That's going to be taken care of. That's a priority to all of the boards. I think years ago there was a consolidation of services for lots of organizations to be more cost effective to have it through one organization, because most of the organizations that provided services, whether it's Transitions Mental Health Association, Family Care Network, so many organizations were pretty small 20 years ago, and there was an economy of scale of combining it. Nowadays, there really are a lot of organizations that are very efficient and effective and very good at leveraging funds, and I think that's what the board's responsibility is, to not only be a good fiduciary steward, that we want to maximize revenue for these special populations that really aren't in a position to do much for themselves, but also work with organizations that are close to those client populations. So it's change is tough sometimes, but I appreciate Councilman Moreno is very well equipped to jump in for me on a pretty complicated issue, because it's very much a financial issue of maximizing, getting the biggest bang for our buck, so to speak, or the most miles for our buck, and I think she made the right decision on that. So thank you for filling in. We have Councilman Sturdivant.
Well, thank you. I'm going to actually start with the League of California Cities, since I was down in Ontario the end of March for the League of California, my policy committee meeting, and which is community housing and economic development. Just a little, SB1 at that point had not passed, but they were, gathering support for it. So one bright spot is that, yes, while it is an increase in taxes, which none of us want that, when it comes to road, the money for actually fixing roads, the money that we receive now is actually going to double. So the highway use users tax to cities is actually going to double with no sunset, and it's going to be indexed for inflation. So there's also a companion bill with SB1 that will make it where the funds will be spent for the intended use. So that was, I think it's AB, I can't remember the number, but there is a companion bill with that. So that is a bright spot for something that is going to cost a lot more money, people in fixed income, those type of things. So we will use the money wisely. So it'll be a positive thing here in Atascadero. Just to go along with what we were talking about tonight, we had three bills come before us in our policy committee, and they all were mandates. They were mandates for cities to do things. It wasn't a request, it was a mandate. And just for an example, one that we opposed was we would have had to have had a 30-day turnaround for a design review committee approval of any project. And if it was not approved on the 31st day, it would be automatically grandfathered in as approved. That I kid you not, this is an actual bill. So along with two others that were equally did not make a lot of sense for city government. So we opposed all three, and I just wanted to share these two here with you. There's 130 bills right now in housing that are dealing with affordable housing in a lot of different aspects. But just these two, I just wanted to get you guys a flavor for what's out there right now. There's a bill that was actually by Bloom in the AB 663, which would broaden the Coastal Commission's authority to include housing policy within the coastal zone. So they want to have the Coastal Commission have authority on housing policy in their area. But this is the one that made me think tonight when we were talking about water. AB 1585 would establish in each city a city and county affordable housing zoning board that would create a single application for a comprehensive conditional use or other discretionary permit for affordable housing. No city council oversight. None. So the state is definitely taking a position of wanting to take away local control, land use control, water authority. So it's something we need to really be aware of and keep our eyes open and be diligent. So And that's just two of the 130 that are going to, we'll talk more about as you add the rest of this. Yes?
Yeah, just a question regarding the SB1.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything about self-help counties? Remember, we had the sales tax that was voted down in San Luis County.
There was no discernment in those funds. No, they did not mention that. The gentleman that gave the budget update stated that if this is what you're getting for your use tax now, he said that the funds will double. Now, unless the city manager has some other information, that's what he shared with us. So.
It is my understanding that there is a small portion of competitive funding that will be for self-help jurisdictions.
But our funding will increase, correct?
Yes. Okay. Our funding will increase. I believe it's around $707,000 annually for help with road maintenance.
Oh, thank you. So, yes, there'll be more bills as this year progresses about affordable housing. But so far, we are willing to give input and feedback to the state to make better bills. I just wish that they had the same respect towards us to give us things that we could work with. So, but I'll keep you informed on the next meeting. Will be in June on that, and more to come. And city schools, please feel free to chime in, mayor and city manager, because with the three of us did attend city schools meeting last Friday. It was really good to get caught up on. I didn't realize we hadn't met. It's been a while. So it was a good catch-up for what the school's been up to with a construction update. They talked about a new science building at the high school that's being built, some new classes and types of different types of training for our kids, and welding, pipe fitting, mechanics, those type of things. So there was it was good to hear what's going on, along with seeing the new building. I still want to take a tour, but haven't done that yet. The district also shared with us their challenge with PERS as well, the PERS retirement, state retirement. So it's something that we all share together so we can share ideas of how we're dealing with that. And then we shared our local economy and how we're, our economic development and how that impacts our the city, the downtown. We talked about traffic, just the interactions between the school board and the city and those areas where the things that we have in common. We have a lot in common that we work through and have to coordinate with each other. So that was a very good meeting. If you have anything to add, Mayor?
Well, I would, and you touched on it, but I think a common theme for both boards, of course, is safety. And we did spend a lot of time talking about downtown safety of students moving around. I appreciate our city engineer is really researching how we might change the configuration of crosswalks. Mm-hmm. We reviewed things we've tried in the past that, what the success likelihood of things that the school's done. And thank you, city manager, reminded the school board that they did have a good portion of funds as part of their bond measure and other source of funds that was supposed to go towards safety, and that would help us a lot in making the downtown more safe. I think there's like $400,000 or something that needs to get over to the city that we could use that with what we are investing in and would make a great improvement, I think, in just pathways for students around the downtown. So I didn't hear a no. I think we need to just remind them that we would certainly support that. And thank you, Mr. City Engineer. And I know the chief, our police chief, has been very active and really looking for what's the best way to have a safe downtown for all pedestrians. Mm-hmm. So I think with that, is there any other council or staff input? And then we are adjourned. Thank you.